Louis-Philippe had become king in 1830. He was reputed to be a liberal. He had fought in the French Revolutionary Army in 1792. He, upon accepting conditions to become the monarch, had dropped the preamble to the Charter of 1814. That preamble, which was so unpalatable to the liberals, in which the Charter, the Constitution of France, was referred to as a gift from the king. He also dropped the king by the grace of God, and instead became simply king of the French people. He was fond of referring to himself as the citizen king. So the July monarchy began with what appeared to be a very solid base of support among liberals. This was going to be a constitutional monarchy, this great elusive goal of moderate liberals that had eluded them in France in 1791, eluded them after 1815. Now, at last, a moderate liberal constitutional monarchy appeared to be in place in France in 1830. But the social foundations of this bourgeois monarchy, as it was sometimes referred to, were remarkably narrow. Political power was restricted to the upper bourgeoisie. The suffrage had been extended from about 100,000 to 170,000 in a country of just over 30 million. It was based on tax liability. Again, I think this is an important point, not what one actually paid, but tax liability. Suffrage, in other words, under the July monarchy, placed power quite clearly in the hands of moderate liberals of some financial substance. Liberals from commerce and from the emerging manufacturing sector of the economy. There were voices raised in the 1830s and certainly in the early 1840s, voices of protest against this, a sense that this was not, this arrangement was not really fair, that it was not equitable. Chief minister most prominently associated with the reign of Louis-Philippe was a man by the name of François Guizot, who combined, I think, arrogance with a profound air of insensitivity. When various opponents of the regime, well, not opponents of the regime, but people who were demanding a change in the suffrage, suggested that the basis of suffrage in France was far too narrow, Guizot's response was, well, what's the matter with the suffrage if there's no problem here, just make more money. Henri Chevreau was quoted as having said. This did not seem to be the most sensitive response to demands for change. This political power was quickly reflected in economic policy in France. The Industrial Revolution had not really taken off in France as yet. It was still in its formative stages. But during the 1830s and the 1840s, rapid economic growth did occur in a few industries scattered across France, with many of the same attendant problems that we've seen in the early stages of the Industrial Revolution in Britain. Child labor, long hours, poor housing, poor hygiene, all of the sorts of evils that we associate with those early unregulated stages of the Industrial Revolution. Moreover, the principle of laissez-faire took very, very deep root in French economic thinking, not in terms of international trade, but domestically. The government was controlled largely by liberal economic interests, and it took no serious steps to regulate conditions in the industrial area. Even when statutes were passed, such as the Child Labor Law in 1841, it was never really enforced. Conditions in the industrial centers of France in the 1830s and early 1840s actually were worse than they were in England, despite the undeveloped state of French industry. Labor unrest was frequent but scattered. It lacked the sort of national cohesiveness that would emerge in England. but one certainly saw the greatest outbreaks of labor violence in France, anywhere in Europe in this period. In Lyon, for example, in 1831 and in 1834. Lyon was the center of the silk industry. In 1834, there was an uprising of workers in Lyon that was staggering in its scale. Workers seized the city. They held it for 5 days. The government was unable to deal with the situation, was forced to send troops to Lyon. They laid siege to the city and finally bombarded it before the insurrection was finally quelled.